Joseph.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul, that's Robert Ramirez, and today we have the amazing Joshua J. Hey Joshua J., how are you?
Hey guys, good to be here.
Thank you for doing this. You got some nice posters behind you that we can't see because this is an audio podcast.
I can describe how they look, but that would probably be pretty boring.
The best part of that was Josh looked forward in front of him at more posters, but we can only see both. Oh, no. Were we looking in a mirror behind you?
You're looking in a mirror behind me. So you were fooled. The first trick of the podcast is my trick with mirrors.
Guys, Josh J is the most amazing magician. We were just fooled on an audio podcast.
Jeez Louise. Good job, guys. Good job. Josh, how's the year been? I know you got a virtual show coming out that you just announced on the Vanishing Ink Peoples. When is that? That's March 3rd?
That's March 3rd, yeah.
Oh, I got it. Yes. That looks exciting. So, I was just reading the description yesterday. It looks fun.
Yeah, thanks. And we can kind of talk about how I landed there. It's, you know, I think your general question is, it's been an interesting year, right? I mean, I'm sure that
Did something happen this year? I've been still doing cruise ships. I don't know what you guys have been doing.
It's been a very snowy winter, and that's just really thrown me.
Okay.
No, but I think we all have kind of the same answer to what a weird year it's been, and I think it's almost trite at this point to talk about how much we miss live audience. I mean, what it is. We're all going through it together, which I think makes it a lot easier. But, you know, it's also been a really great year, which I feel weird saying because I know a lot of people are hurting, but it's been a great year because I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but I do this to myself because I can't say no, and I'm just really busy all the time, like really busy. And as Vanishing Ink has grown and the performing career has become more business than sometimes artistry, you get really far away from why we got into this. And I have to tell you, it had been years since I had sat cross-legged on the ground in my pajamas with a magic book playing. And that's not to say I don't still create and play, but it had just been years since I felt the sort of freedom to sit down while there was still daylight and like jot stuff down in my notebook and play. And that's been awesome. I mean, I genuinely feel it for all the cliches I'm sure it sounds like I've been totally renewed in magic, like fallen in love all over again with what it is I like most about it, because I haven't had the time to do this since forever. And that's been great.
It's so weird that I have been, in the last couple of weeks, I've been grabbing magic books and starting to like sit at my desk with a close-up pad and like just the exact same thing. Just kind of look through stuff and go, I'm just going to build this, or I'm going to try this.
Right.
It's something that looks interesting. But I literally sit in my pajamas, cross-legged in my chair right here and at my desk. So when you describe it, I was like, that's really creepy. Is he?
Yeah.
We're all doing that.
Well, you know, that's where I got it from, is I just, I've been looking through the window just in the main area of your house and seeing you do that. And I think that's kind of where
the intro for our virtual show, I was wondering, I'm like, is that Joshua J just sitting in your closet? And you're like, no. And you closed it very quickly.
We might have to add Josh's face in the window in that opening video. So
we really
only
should.
People who have listened to the podcast will go, oh my God, there he is.
It's interesting. I mean, when you talk about the podcast, you know, I can kind of credit something that you were present for, Nick, when we asked about the question about virtual shows, because I've been doing them like everybody else has, but I will tell you, I'm the most reluctant person doing them. I'll tell you, kind of an epiphany for me sort of happened possibly as a result of something that I heard at something you were present for, Nick, as well. So like everybody else, you know, the pandemic happens and I've got shows in my calendar and they're calling and they're sort of going, hey, we're moving to all virtual event for this. I mean, mostly university shows. Do you want to do it? And like, yeah, I do, because I don't want to lose the gig and I don't want to, you know, be passed over and, you know, I don't want to be left out. So I threw together a virtual show, but it wasn't really where my heart was at. And I don't think it was a very good virtual show. And we're all feeling our way through this, but Justin Willman, after his show, said something that eventually became the idea that made me change my show all around. And he sort of said, almost like threw it away. He was like, in a comment, he said, well, you know, these shows, they're a little way for us to show our home life. They're a peer into our lifestyle. And like, I thought that was a really astute comment. Now, I will say, like, I love Justin's virtual show, but I don't think his virtual show really goes in that direction very much. I think that's just an observation he made. I mean, his show is just pure fun. He's got this great segment with his kid, but, you know, his show is just like exactly what I'd imagine him doing in a virtual show, which is great. But I really kind of took that and was like, well, wait a minute. What if this camera is peering into our creative lives? Like, this is where I create my tricks. This is where I write to prison magicians. This is where I came up with cool psychological things that can be used on people. This is where my books are. Could we use the books in a trick? And really get personal in that way. And that's when I switched the show around. And that's when reactions really started changing. And I started to get a lot more satisfaction out of doing these shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a fun show to be a part of. I mean, I was just stage managing, but it was great. The talk back you guys all did at the end, there was a lot of, I mean, once we got past all the people asking basic tech questions, which is like, come on, just go on YouTube. But like, then we got to like the heart of a couple things of like, oh no, there's a lot you can actually do in this realm that I think people are being so negative about, when reality, it can be a positive. Like, I don't know if you could normally do a show like what you're describing.
No.
You could in the live set, but it's not the same. You know, it's different because you're actually at your house and you're like, no, this is where I actually create this and this is where I do this.
I do my virtual show from my bedroom, and I say this is where the magic happens, and then I proceed to do exactly what you think I do. Just sit in a curled in a blanket and cry.
Well, that show's legendary, by the way. You ran that show for about 2 months at the Pittsburgh Magic Theater.
It was real hard, too. Man, that was an emotional beating.
Yeah.
Good press, though. Good press on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would be out of place. Most of the material that I'm doing in this virtual show exists. It's things that I do already, but I have repurposed them and in some cases been able to like retool them in a very deceptive way. Like, I think it's going to add to the layers of what's good about them. But there are things, I think it would be weird and self-aggrandizing to talk about process and stuff behind the scenes, but it makes total sense in your home to do it because it's such a personal thing. So in that sense, I'm really excited by it. And I agree with you about Justin. You know, he is so good at something that I think most magicians, he's so good at it that most magicians don't even realize what it is he's great at, which is he's so present. I mean, he is like, all those years of doing show hosting and emceeing and Cupcake Wars, I mean, they really contribute to this feeling that he is present in the moment right now with the people on screen. It's really great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that that's very special to performers. And I think, you know, I think you have that. I think Robert has that. I think, like, if you're missing the mark as a magician, I think that's what you're lacking, is just living in the exact moment with these people. Even though you've done this routine 1,000 times, to them it's the first time. And, you know, it's an acting thing too. You're reacting to, even though you've rehearsed this scene 1,000 times, you're reacting to it as if it's the first time it's happening. And, you know, just staying present is so important, and especially in virtual shows too, because you know, all these people, I mean, I think half of them are like, is this recorded? And then, but as long as you're staying present and, you know, calling out things that are happening in real time, I think it kind of keeps it all grounded.
Yeah, you know, and it's tough. It's really tough to do because you come about it from that angle. And I recently have started to think that the other extreme is equally bad. And I'll be vague about this on purpose, but I saw a show from a performer who was trying so hard to be present, to be what we're talking about, in the moment, commenting on things. But it was so far, it was so poorly done that they were present. I mean, they most definitely were off script and in the moment, but they were commenting on things that couldn't possibly make a difference to the show. They were reaching for funny that wasn't funny, and they were doing inside jokes, and like, what you're left with is feeling like the time has been abused. Like, hey, you have an hour here. We paid to see the show, and you're like, you're engaging in like really idle chat. And it really
wasn't Robert a nice ticketed show from last week, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Because I just kept making jokes.
I wanted to point it out to you guys.
Yeah, yeah. I just kept making jokes to Nick about Nick.
Yeah, we couldn't figure out. Can you believe this guy? He has socks on right now. Why is he wearing socks? Yeah. And the camera couldn't even see the socks.
No.
But like, you know, like I know what you mean, Nick, because I think you're coming about it from like I tend to just be kind of over scripted. So for me, it's a constant reminder to be in the moment, comment on something in the background or you know, something that somebody said, or if somebody's got super high energy, why is that? You know, would you just have cereal? What's going on here? But the opposite is also true. And that's being too loose and too in the moment, because it just ends up feeling really indulgent. And so when somebody like Justin nails it so correctly, you have to marvel at it, because it never feels like he's killing time. It never feels like, I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Because that truly is something on my, like, I just struggle. Like, here's what happens. It's like the people get put in my virtual showroom and I tend to go like, hey, there's Robert. Robert, where are you from?
California.
California. Cool. So good to have you with us. And then I'm out and I'm sort of like, so Robert, there are number cards and picture cards.
We're going to burn one.
And I mean, part of me feels like, okay, it's not my strong suit to kibitz. I'm not Justin, you know, to come up with, to make, you know, lemonade out of lemons. So I just kind of tend to be very business oriented and use the people. I mean, none of my tricks use them as props. They're not just there to name a card. They're saying something about themselves. But do you guys have any thoughts on how to make it three-dimensional?
I mean, just describing whatever show you saw, I know I've fallen into that trap in virtual or live shows. I know I can push too hard of just like, hey, let's call this out, let's do that, because, you know, the improv instincts come in too much. So, yeah, I mean, I'm on the opposite end of the scale. So I'm trying too hard, and I need to be more scripted and more of a through line. But I don't know, Robert, I guess...
I think it's super easy to like end. to get the opposite way like that. Like when I was doing the show in Pittsburgh, there was one show that was a private show, but it was two companies that were like, they're not competing, but they did the same thing. And the problem was there was half the audience was basically all laughing to themselves. And then the other half of the audience was all laughing to themselves. So it was this really hard thing that I would say a joke that only half the audience would laugh. And then I could kind of like play with that idea. But, like, I found halfway through the show that I was doing it too much and I needed to stop, because the show was, A, going to be way too long, but, B, you could feel that it almost got past the point of, like, this is kind of fun, but it just was like, oh, this is oddly, like, to me. And I think that's the hard thing that people find, is they think, you know, if it's more personable if I, you know, call stuff out over and over again. And it's kind of finding that blend. I have the same problem, too, Josh, of, like, using a spectator and then trying to be a person with them.
Right.
And usually I think I don't even try to make them a person. I don't think I ask them how they're doing or whatever. I just think I say, can you help me? Great. And if they say something, then I can use that information and call it out, or, you know, use that improv skill to push harder on it. But
so, yeah. And I mean, obviously, like, if we zoom out and we're talking live shows as well, I have very strong feelings about magicians who abuse that and magicians who really master it. And to me, the secret is always in the scripting. And I'm not just saying the words, I'm saying the choreography of the piece. Like, when I think about the very best impromptu seeming interactions, the ones where you're going to go, I was like, we all have stories. I guarantee you, we're all going to have this story. One time, 14 years ago, I saw Jeff McBride bring a little kid on stage, and this little kid was like hamming it up. And everybody's got that story, because that's one of the great interactive pieces of magic ever created, his Miser's Dream. But of course, if you see it two nights in a row, you realize it's the choreography of the piece. The little kids are average at best, but he puts them in a position to you know, to shine, and yeah. and he's cueing them by doing the too many bows. He's cueing them in how he gives them a coin to put in their pocket and take home when they smile. Everything about it, he makes those kids a star, but it's because there's meat on the bone of how he's interacting.
Yeah.
And you know, the ones that I have the most success, like I did this thing in my show, my live show, where I did the finger chopper, you know, which is a strange trick to do because it's like a beginner's hack piece. But what's great about it is everything about that piece was about them personally. And I talked to them about their fears.
Yeah.
I make a bet. I talk about putting my finger in. Then they put their finger in. And like, there's so much to mine about that moment that's real and in the moment because I'm giving them a chance to like react to this situation. Whereas
yeah.
if I'm trying to get something about you, you've got a blank wall behind you. You're not, I haven't given you anything for me to go on. Your energy's pretty much matched to mine. Like, where are we going to find the funny or the interesting in this? Unless I ask now, if instead the trick was, so Rob, are you a Disney guy or a horror film guy? You know, at least now, whatever you say,
yeah.
like we're digging into something that's meaty there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. Something with like kids though is, I feel like to get good at that is you have to do it a million times and not be afraid of it failing, because you're gonna fail so often until you hit that point where you just go, I know exactly how the works. I know exactly how to get this for everyone to shine. And kids to me are easier to do than adults. Cause in the Pittsburgh show, I always try to grab a kid for this M&M thing. And they always just had like the best reactions. They always had the best like sassiness back. Always. It didn't matter. Like, they always had some line they said back to me that was just so great. I think that's its own skill, but I kind of don't know how to gain that other than doing it and not being afraid of,
well,
sucking.
Of course. I totally agree. I mean, there is no substitute for, you know, happening upon something funny and then recreating it every show.
Yeah. My favorite question is, like, so like if I was doing a trick with you, Josh, I would say, Josh, you seem like a very exciting, interesting person. Do you like your nipples pinched or do you like just little tickles in your armpit?
Yeah. Good. Good,
you said every show.
Yeah, because it depending on what you say, it's a different trick.
Right. Rob, by the way, I just got a text. You've been canceled. So.
okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Rob
has
left.
It's been great, though. It's been great. You had a good run.
Oh, he's gone. He turned off his camera. Oh,
right. That means you're gone.
I guess the two-person show I'm doing on next Saturday means that just it's a one-person
show.
Now
your podcast name actually makes sense.
Exactly. It's been a struggle for years.
The other thing, and I mean, this gets back to something, and you know, when we talk in these terms, nobody can live up to these completely because these are lofty goals. But I often think about that the reason that there's such poor interaction in so many magic shows and magic tricks is that the spectators are props.
Sure.
They are merely there to pick a card or loan you a dollar bill with their name on it, or stand here and hold this or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas the really great tricks are the ones where their answers really matter.
Yeah.
Like, hey, let me ask you a question, Nick. So you're in a grocery store and you're walking down every aisle and you can only buy one thing. And it has to be a junk food item. Nothing healthy. No avocados, no green juices. What do you get? I mean, that's a question I ask in my show. And
bullet
there's
bourbon.
So much. What did you say?
Bullet bourbon. That's a junk food, right?
Sure. We'll accept it. But like, that's a question I ask in my parlor show, and it's a great one because if they say something healthy, it gets groans and you can go to there. If they say something super gross and junk foody, then they get applause and oh yeah, you know. And there's great byplay because the way you're interacting says something about you and a decision you made. It's not just you saying red cards or black cards, you know.
Yeah. What's crazy is before everything went to virtual, like the past year, because I've been doing more and more cruise ships, is I've been trying to get to the point where I bring nobody up on stage. And when I interact with people, it's just talking to them from the stage, picking a card, getting a name or something. Because I think, A, mostly they're old people and it takes 7 minutes to get them on and off stage. And it's you know, it just slows down the pace of the show. And B, you're not really getting it. It's what you're talking about. You're not getting that interaction. So it's like, well, if I need someone to pick a card, name a card. Great. Okay, moving on. And then that just saved 5 minutes of the show, and the pace keeps going. And I think a lot of people get trapped in the, well, I need somebody to be up on stage.
Yeah.
But we've talked about this to death. It's like, if your routine requires somebody to be funny from the audience, and you're not the one entertaining, I don't think it's that great of a routine. I think you're placing too much on the audience spectator. And sure, you can get it to be like a Jeff McBride where it kills every time in that type of miser's dream sense. But I think if it really doesn't require a spectator, I think you should not be using somebody.
I don't think magicians have enough work ethic to really choreograph.
It's hard. That. It's much harder.
Yeah. So people just go, well, if I bring someone on stage to hold something, that's interaction.
Well, it's interesting, too. I interviewed Adam Rubin on my I do an Instagram. Let me give a little shout out here. I do a little Instagram thing every Friday where I bring people on. I have to have both you guys on at some point. And we just chat magic. It's just my little Instagram IG live, since I can't meet with magicians and jam in person. It's my way of staying connected. And I had Adam Rubin on. And he said something very interesting to me. And what I love about it is it's in direct opposition to something another friend who I admire equally as much said. And he said this, and this was so beautifully put. He said that he really loves to have spectators on stage because magic is the only art form where you get to have a co-star with the audience. And I thought that was beautifully phrased, that the audience is the co-star. I mean, that's a really awesome way of looking at it. But then contrast that to, I think, the greatest living magician. I'm not exaggerating because he's my friend. I think Rune Klan is the greatest magician living today, just because if you know what he does, you know how often he's innovating the shows that he's doing, how much he's killing the audience every time he does it. He's really against it. Like he told me flat out, his goal in an hour show is to have people on stage with him as little as possible. And it's not an ego thing. It's nothing to do. You know, he has a very complex theory about it. But he's like you, Nick. He wants people helping from the audience. And he has a vision, and he think it muddies the vision. And he wants the help to come off stage as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. I've just sat in so many shows at the Castle behind the curtain and hearing people in the front row go, oh, well, okay, do you think he's going to pick me? I don't want to go up. I don't want to do this. And just people like... that's all people are thinking about. Half the audience is thinking about, oh, I hope he doesn't pick me. And I think just like being able to ease that burden for some of the audience gives you, better reactions because they're not worried about being embarrassed.
Yeah.
I agree with both points of what you just said, for sure. Both ends of the spectrum. I think it's necessary for points, and making them the co-star and, you know, as David Kovac says, sending them back a hero is so important. So it's you just kind of have to figure out what works best for you, I think.
What is your stance on it, Josh? Because I don't like audience members. Nick and I have talked about this before. I'm not a big fan of bringing on stage. When Nathan Fan and I did our Peller show, which was the first time I did the Castle, we designed it so that there was nobody on stage. The one person comes on stage at the very end to not be a prop, but to be a prop, but on purpose, where the audience knows that we're doing that on purpose, which is what made it funny. But it was the only time we brought anyone on stage.
Yeah. I guess I fall somewhere in the middle is the answer to that question.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I mean, I have very strong feelings about other things, but this isn't an issue where, like, when I designed my show, the skeletal structure of it, I said I do or I don't.
Yeah.
I can tell you that in my 45-minute show, there are two pieces where somebody's on stage with me, but I guess I can say in a good way, reflecting both pieces, they are not props. They are on stage, and what they say, they need mic'd because what they say really matters.
Yeah.
And there's good interaction there, and it's their borrowed item that they're going to discover in a roundabout way. And yeah,
that's great.
I really love in virtual, you know, just the picture in picture aspect. And this is something we stumbled upon with Justin's show, which I wasn't doing until, you know, like September or October. I'm like, no, we'll just go back and forth between people. But it's so important in virtual to see the reaction to what's happening. Like, that makes the whole difference for everybody else watching. And that is the one advantage of having somebody up on stage in a real show, is you get to see them react, and that cues the audience on how to react. It's like, oh, this is actually legit. This is actually amazing. And so that is definitely a big advantage of having an audience member next to you. I think what you're doing stronger.
And you know what? Credit to the maestro, Juan Tamarez. I mean, having hired him and worked with him on a bunch of stage shows at our conventions, I can tell you, he and his entourage are really sticklers about the way video is projected in his live shows. Now, I'm not talking virtual, of course. I'm talking actual onstage shows. And, I mean, I've got some issues with it, but what you can't argue with is this philosophy. He wants, whenever you have Juan on stage, he is going to tell you that he needs a circular projector screen. He believes that because the eye is round. I'm not so sure I buy this part, but the eye is round and he wants it rounded off, and he thinks that squared edges are unappealing on a stage. And he wants it as close to the table as humanly possible, to the point where they have to figure out, just so he's not in the actual shadow of his own projection. And then he puts the camera overhead. And the idea is really smart. His idea, because, you know, any convention, any projector of any magic show, we have the stage flanked left and right with screens. But you're doing tennis. You're watching the guy really small on stage, and then you're going over here to see the close-up of his mat. He wants you to be able to look at one area of the stage and see his body language, his gestures and his hand gestures and everything. And then without being able to look elsewhere, which is to your picture-in-picture point, Nick, you see the close-up of the straight-down angle of the cards. And that's really smart, because you're not doing tennis when you're watching Juan.
You're saying that when I perform at Magi Fest, I can demand a circular projection screen as humanly close to me.
If you change the R in your name to a T so that you become Rob Tamirez instead of Ramirez.
That's your new alter ego. That's your new
great
show you got to start writing.
That's great.
But instead of being like really good at card magic, you're just terrible.
But I'm still loud.
You're still very loud. Still very loud.
Here's the thing. You do the tech at your own peril. I mean, we've had a lot of people come through. It's very funny. It's actually, you know, I don't know how many other people get the insight that we're lucky enough to get by running these conventions, because we get to work with all these magicians, in other words, with all these egos. And people come through and they have really fantastically terrible ideas. And and you can only help them so much. And at some point you have to go have a blast hanging yourself, my friend. Because
yeah.
we've had a very well-known performer come in and go, I don't use video projection when I work. And we're like, okay, but no offense, like, there's 1,100 people in the audience. You're probably used to working for 50, 60 people, or maybe you don't work that much. I don't know what's going on, but like, I'm sure you have your reasons, but just so you know, stand at the back of this theater and I'm going to go on stage so you understand how small you're going to be to deny video projection. Like, we don't have to do your hands, but
yeah,
without video projection, just so you know, it's really going to be off-putting. And they die. You know, they go on stage and they die a slow death, and halfway through they go, hey, maybe we could put video on. Would that be? Nope, you dismiss those guys.
Too late.
You didn't want them.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've had people say, you know, I don't work with lapel mics. I only work with handheld mics. It's like, okay, but you know, you are doing a magic lecture. That's going to come into a problem. And then they can't be heard the whole time because they're having to set it on the table. And
that stuff is tough. That's not a word. That type of stuff. Sorry, mild stroke right there. Type of stuff is what happens. You know, you learn that by doing cruise ships. Of like, I travel with my own microphone and my own audio setup because I don't know what it's going to be, and right. I'm not a diva about it because this is what they have. This is the stuff. And if you don't have your own stuff, you have to adjust. And it blows my mind that people wouldn't, you know, okay, if you have these specific requirements, no problem, but bring it yourself. don't make people jump through hoops to like appease this random weird request you have. That blows my mind.
I mean, the other one that's always so interesting to me is, and I began to think it was like what the cool kids did, because, you know, I'd say to these, my heroes in Mandalay, how do you want to be introduced? Introductions don't matter. Just make it quick. Don't say anything too nice and get me on stage. I'll take it from there. Wow, cool. He doesn't even care about his intro. And then we did this study, you know, that I was a part of. From
I was
some
about to say,
ago.
Yeah, this is great.
And we found out, in my opinion, you know, of course, subject to further testing, but the results were not even close. They were overwhelmingly conclusive that when we showed a group of people either two videos or two live performances, but it's always the same, right? A and B are watching the same clip, but clip A is introduced as please watch magician Nick Paul do this trick or whatever. And then video B is, please watch world champion magician Nick Paul do the act that won him the FISM prize, magic's highest honor, blah, 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 blah. An introduction, a show with an introduction before it tests about twice as favorable as one without an introduction. More than that, afterward, when they've had an introduction to the show, they are overwhelmingly more likely to want to see more. Because after it's over, you say, would you like to watch another video by this performer? Or would you like to watch blah, 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 something else? What's even weirder is when they guessed at the methods of the tricks, and this is across many videos, by the way, not just one particular video, they guessed less accurately when there was an introduction, as if they sort of submitted and said, I'm in the hands of an expert. This guy's or this person is clearly an amazing performer. I'm not even going to be able to guess at the method. Yeah. So once again, like working with a lot of great magicians, it can be eye-opening. I mean, I'm not going into all the ways that I see performers, you know, and I learn things from working with them. But it's interesting sometimes how performers that let their egos get in the way, they don't want an introduction. And that's so important some of the time.
Yeah,
I've seen that a bunch at the castle of just like the you'll see one show where the intro is same intro, but, you know, it's not done well. And then you see it done by another manager and it's done really well. And, you know, just the reaction, it could be a whole bunch of things, but that's such a great important study. I'd love to learn more about that because that makes a lot of sense.
We can talk about it.
Somebody intro'd me once like this. They said, I don't know Robert Ramirez, but everyone's talking about him. And then they walked away. And that was my intro.
Well, the thing was, when I introduced you that way, Rob, it was because I hadn't seen you work at that point. And, you know.
Do you remember this story? I'm going to tell the story, Josh. And I told Nick this story. I want to know how well you remember this, because I remember it very vividly, because it was the greatest magic trick of my entire life. The first time I really kind of met you, that we really talked, was at like Magic Live or something. And and you found out that I did theater, and you were like, I live in New York. I love Broadway. I love musicals. And then you immediately said, out of these five musicals, what's my favorite? And you listed five musicals, and I broke down every single one of them and which ones you didn't like and the reasons why. And every time you're like, yeah, that's exactly why I don't like that, until I got to whatever it was. And I was like, you like this because of this. And you're like, yes, that was the greatest mentalist act I've ever seen. And I was really upset that I didn't predict it.
Yeah, I do remember that. And I think that it's because that's an interest of mine, and I know that's your world. But yeah, I mean, I'm always trying to weird you out, because you're a hard one to weird out. You're like a hard person to phase, and it's my favorite kind of person is trying to phase. Like Andy's another one, my business partner Andy Gladwin. He doesn't laugh easy. He really doesn't laugh at all. Even if something's really funny, the most you can get is shock. Like shock for him is so we, you know, we're in meetings like all day, and they're usually just not fun. They're about, you know, money and contracts and accountants and whatever. And I will just like throw things in to just try to shock him, because to get his face like really surprised that I went there in front of somebody else or something, that's what I live for. And you're like that too.
That's
I just want to get that.
He's like polar opposite to me, and his persona on stage is so like kind of over the top and fun and happy and joyful. And then, you know, just working with him on the Justin show with you guys in December, I was like, oh, he's like a really quiet, easygoing dude. I'm like, oh, he's British. That's
right.
What I'm
yes, yeah, he's very he's quiet. British. I mean, that's the thing, is like the British audiences, man. Every time I got to look in the mirror before I go on stage and go, it's not you, it's them.
Yeah, yeah.
And afterward, they're really lovely, but during the show, just so quiet and reserved.
I tell myself that before any show, just in case. Yeah.
It's them. It's not
them.
Me.
It's gotta be them.
I didn't do any rehearsal, but it's okay. It's
I just learned this trick 30 minutes ago.
Which is true for some of our virtual
I show. Literally opened balance, I took it out, and then I just immediately did it for somebody.
I get those emails all the time. Hey, I've got a show in 3 hours and I broke the thread. What am I supposed to do? Like, oh good. You're putting it in your show 3 hours after you got it. Awesome.
Did you just say stop being a magician because you're ruining it for the rest of us?
I know, right? Oh my god.
That's fantastic.
This is fun. We, you know, we'll wrap up soon. But you know, I always end the podcast asking, like, what's, like, the worst thing that's ever happened at a gig? But I'm trying to be more positive in 2021. So, like, what's the best thing that's happened to you at a gig? It can be in the real world and, you know, in the times before the Empire.
Times before the Empire. Thank you for that Star Wars reference. I was not going to get off the phone until we at least bridged magic to Star Wars.
Yeah, always.
Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm trying to think of...
Just something wonderful that's happened that was so unexpected. Maybe a great moment with a spectator. Let's see. I mean, I talked about one last week for our virtual show where, like, I had a friend send us a message after and say, hey, I lost my dog. And, you know, watching your guys' virtual show is the first time I'd laughed in a very long time. And, you know, that just meant a lot. And it just kind of brought it home to,
really
like,
sweet.
Oh, it's not really about... the magic at the end of the day. It's about, you know, giving people kind of a special experience.
And we're not even doing good magic. That's like the weirdest part. I've been looking up Magic Atlas and I've just been doing stuff from that.
Yeah, good. I mean, it's a treasure trove of gold. I'm told that right after the Di Vernon Book of Magic and Stars of Magic, it's the greatest magic book ever written.
But as you think about the question, I want to know, do you still do stuff from that book?
I mean, you know, here's a really funny thing. So I was at home and, you know, like all proud mothers, my mom's got this semi-embarrassing but really sweet little shrine to me and little clippings from all along my career and stuff. And there's Magic Atlas, right? And I don't have it here in my library or anything. Like, don't read my own books.
No, it's all in your own head, baby.
That's right. I did pick it up. And, you know, I can be honest about it because it's so long. I mean, I got hammered when that book came out for putting out a book too young. And I absolutely should have been hammered for putting out a book too young. And I got hammered for, you know, the sort of naivete of doing a book when you don't know your history as well as you should. And that's all deserved. But I got to tell you, flipping through that book, I mean, if there's, 40 items or something, there's still probably 9 or 10 items that you guys would know that I still do, that I still put in my lectures, that I still, and they've stood the test of time over 20 years. Do I wish I could rewrite them? Do I wish I would have waited and put that book out now? Of course. But the answer is yes.
Do you just confirm Magic Atlas 2? Is that what
Magic
I'm hearing?
Atlas 2, The Journey Home.
Starring Nicolas Cage.
Oh my God. Here's what you do, Josh. Here's what you do. Here's how you do it. I guarantee people will buy this book. I guarantee you. You do another Magic Atlas book, but it looks exactly the same, except it's you at this age. The cover.
In the red suit. Oh,
in the red
God.
Suit. Do you understand how many people will buy that book so they can put it next to their Magic Atlas book and be like, guys,
do you understand that the jerks already picks on me 4 days a week? That he doesn't need any more fuel for the fire. We don't have to do that. Interestingly enough, I know you're kidding, but we're doing that with Harrison.
Oh,
so
great.
We're doing Harrison Greenbaum's book, his book, You Are All Terrible, but it's going to be formatted to look like Tarbell 9.
That's
so
fantastic.
That you put it on the shelf right next to Tarbell. Everything about it, it's just got that little color. It's got the little, and it's going to be so, I can't wait to do it. It's such a good idea.
That's great.
Coming back to what you were saying, like, you know, cool things about a show. I mean, I've had people say really, really wonderful things. And, you know, one of the greatest things I can say, and actually this happened on a cruise ship, Nick, is just a really, you know, a lot of times people come up and they say nice things and you're like so grateful that they do, but, you know, you're not going to become lifelong friends with them. But I've had 2 or 3 instances on the cruises where I have met up with people after the cruises on land because they just seem so sweet and they're so nice and that's all been great. But probably the coolest one was I did a show in Latin America and shout out to Guatemala. It was in Guatemala. And after the show, it was at this resort, it was a very high-end affair. And I did the show, and this guy kind of like was like monopolizing my time afterward. He was really interesting, and I kind of like kept trying to deflect and get it off of me. And he's like, me? Oh, I'm nothing. I'm just the helicopter driver. I'm the helicopter pilot. And I was like, you're the helicopter pilot? Well, it turns out he was lying. He was the father of the person having the event, and it's the family helicopter, but he did drive, and he's like, do you want to go out in the helicopter? and I got a helicopter ride after the show over the lake at this resort in Guatemala. And I was like, that in that moment, it was pretty cool to be a magician.
Awesome. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And it didn't crash. So that's important. It
didn't crash.
Great. You survived.
Josh, to get tickets to your show, is it Advantaging Inc. or is it a different website?
Yeah, it all kind of funnels to the same place. So right now, my website, joshuaj.com, probably the easiest one to remember. That'll funnel you right over to Showtime where you get the tickets. It's the same program that Justin's show was on. It's called How Magicians Think, and I'm really proud of it. It's some things you'll have seen before, but it's a format that really genuinely lets people know my process and how I got into it. I've been having a blast doing it privately. We'll see how it goes at the public show, but it should be fun, and I'll see you guys all there.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Ben. Thanks for doing this. Good to chat with you.
Yeah, good to chat. Are we done now? Are we off?
No, I'll play us off. I'll play us off.
Okay, here we go.
Let's get down to business to defeat the Huns.
I love it.
They send me daughters.
He's going to keep going. Don't worry. He's going to keep going.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.